Uh-huh. Greetings, America. Good evening, truth seekers. Happy Friday to all. It is I, Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow. Yeah, once again, in for Mike. He's got the night off. He'll be back. It's a Molly day once again on Friday. So Mike and Kathy are off. They'll be back with you Monday. Until then, you got me. But don't worry, I will make it worth your while. What did I say? Oh, yeah, the guy from bradblog.com. Yeah, that's me. You can reach us throughout the night at our phone number here in beautiful Los Angeles, where we are broadcasting for the next 3 hours from the lovely studios of K-Talk AM 1150. Our phone number will be 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down. You're going to want to call. I'm going to tick you off, and you're going to need to call in and give me a piece of your mind. And I'm happy to have it. You can also Twitter me at TheBradBlog all night long, TheBradBlog. And we have, as usual, our live chat room up and rolling, our special Mike Malloy chat room at BradBlog.com. Stop on by. It's the top item there. Jump on in. Say hello to everyone. I think Desi's there. For Earth is there. Who else is there? Well, you go find out who's there. They're all good folks. They'd love to hear from you. That's at the bradblog.com chat room at the top of the very first item. I think Margo's on her way. Margo's late. I'm docking her tonight. All right. She's our super duper associate producer. I may tick off one of those dupers. All right, we got a big show for you tonight, as always, as ever. And although, you know what, I'm putting it all on hold for a second, because on the way over here, I stopped at my post office box, and there in my box is this book that I am now holding in my hand. This may be contraband. I may not even be able to talk about it. Some of you folks know that I have reported for years on end. I think I first started reporting on Sibel Edmonds back in 2005, I want to say. That's my best guess. She is the 9/11 FBI whistleblower. Let's call her the FBI whistleblower. She went to work at the FBI after 9/11 as a translator. The ACLU has called her the most gagged woman in the world because she saw some stuff while she was an FBI translator, and she tried to get that information out. She saw what she describes as, let's say, spying from with inside the FBI, inside the translation department there, and she tried to tell her story everywhere she could. She was fired by the FBI. The inspector general looked into her story, found that she was credible. Both Republican and Democratic U.S. senators alike found that she was very credible with her story. And yet she was gagged under the George W. Bush administration's Department of Justice. John Ashcroft went to court, used the state secrets privilege to shut her up so that she could not tell her story. She could not tell what she saw. She could not even give her name, where she went to school. That's how gagged she was under the Bush administration's gag order. And 60 Minutes did a story about her. Eventually, she began speaking because she took her case all the way to the Supreme Court. And what she was trying to tell people was that she was witness to, among other things, a network that was run at some of the highest levels of government that was actually transporting nuclear materials, selling nuclear secrets to the black market around the globe. It's an extraordinary story, and I only know it because years later, after she had gone all the way to the Supreme Court, she said, well, you know what, Brad, I'm going to tell my story, and we broke that at bradblog.com. I will tell the story to anyone in the mainstream corporate media who will hear it. I don't care. I'm going to defy the gag order if I need. They can come in and they can arrest me if they want. And, interestingly enough, I only got one bite back then. This was, you know, after everybody had made so much to do about the fact that she couldn't talk, like 60 Minutes, who did the special on her, ran it twice. And by the way, the Bush Justice Department retroactively classified that report on 60 Minutes. That's how sensitive they were to what she had to say. There was a huge feature story by David Rose in Vanity Fair on Sybil Edmonds. So I've been telling her story for years. Dan Ellsberg, the whistleblower from the Pentagon Papers, actually guest blogged at bradblog.com some years ago to write about Sybil and reported that, in his opinion, her story was more explosive than the Pentagon Papers. Well, now Sybil has decided finally to tell her own story in her own book. And as a former FBI translator, according to her contract, she has to submit any such book to the FBI so that they can read it, redact any sensitive materials, any classified materials. But they have to do so within 30 days. We're now going on a year since she turned in her document, her manuscript, to the FBI to get their approval, to find out what she could and couldn't say. And they're slow walking her case. Obviously, it's been a year and they haven't given her the redactions that she has to include. So she has said, you know what? I'm publishing anyway. Enough is enough. I only had to wait 30 days. I've waited a year. I am now releasing my memoir. And the memoir is called Classified Woman, The Sybil Edmonds Story. It will hit the internets, hit the bookstores, if there are any left, on, I believe, May 7th. I am holding in my hands a copy of the unredacted version of Classified Woman, The Sybil Edmonds Story. I wanted to bring Sybil on tonight. She wasn't able to come on the show. She said she'll come with us a little bit later. I think we're back in for Mike in the middle of June, I think, for a week or so. We'll try to bring her back in then. But you can, if you want, and this is an unpaid, this is not an advertisement. I'm not paid to tell you this, but you can go to classifiedwoman.com right now. You can get you can pre-order a copy. It was just went on to Amazon.com late last night, I am told. And I don't know if I'm allowed to have this book unredacted, unapproved by the DOJ. You can hear, that? That's the pages of the book, the pages you're not supposed to read. But I have it right here. If the DOJ wants it, they can come and get it from me. As Charlton Heston used to say, they can pry it from my dead, cold, dead fingers. I was driving over here. I said, oh, should I say that on the air? Dez said, no, you know what? Don't tempt them. Tony agrees. He agrees because he'll be hanging out with me tonight. We'll go get some food afterwards, and he knows they're going to take him down first. You're not going to throw yourself in front of me, are you? No, you're going to run away. That's what I thought. All right. Anyway, Classified Woman. Go check out classifiedwoman.com. One hell of a story, and I suspect it's one hell of a read. Haven't read it yet, though, because I just got it on the way here. Anyway, that has thrown everything off, thrown my whole plan off just to tell you about that story. We're going to be speaking of state secrets, we're going to be talking a little bit later this hour with Dan Auerbach of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Oh, man. About the newest assault on your rights, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, because apparently the government did not have enough access to your emails, to your phone calls, to your usage of the internet. So they have to pass a new law. It just passed yesterday in the House. Another version is coming to the Senate soon, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. It's called CISPA. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation and a bunch of other good organizations are against this new Cyber Spying Act. I'll tell you about that next hour. I'm also going to be speaking next hour my interview with 90-year-old Joyce Block, who from Pennsylvania, where they have just passed, the Republicans out there have just passed a new photo ID restriction, polling place photo ID restriction bill. Joyce Block is 90 years old. She has voted for 70 years without fail. She was born 2 years after women got the right to vote in this country. She has never missed an election. Now she is fighting for her right to vote at 90 years old. She's fighting for her right to vote. She can't get the photo ID, the quote-unquote free photo ID that she's supposed to be allowed. Remember, you hear these bills. Oh, it's a free photo ID. Nothing to worry about. If you don't have a driver's license, don't worry. Yeah, well, she's 90 years old. Sure, she can go to the DMV. It's a half an hour away. And she doesn't drive because she has no driver's license. She would not like to see her perfect 70-year voting record broken, although the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation has denied her her photo ID. But we've got an update on that. We're going to I talked to her a little bit earlier in the week. We're going to play that interview a little bit later in the show. And quick, Tony, let's take a break. We'll come back. Oh, we got lots more show for you. Hang in there with me. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Mike. Stay with us.
This is a public service announcement with guitar. Know your rights. All three of them. Number one, you have the rights not to be killed.
Well, we'll have to check the law on that. Laws may have changed. Not sure if you have that right to not be killed. Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In from Mike on your Friday for your Friday Molly Day. Glad you could join us here tonight. Big show coming up. Don't forget to stop by the chat room where 4Earth just told me, hey, Brad, you're looking and sounding good. Well, I thank you, 4Earth. I hope I'm sounding good. How do you know what I'm looking like? Has the spying on the internet gotten even worse than I thought? Yeah, I know we're in the camera. We have cameras here. We're in Stephanie Miller's current TV studio, so they're always spying. Now so is the government. At least they would like to. Apparently, it's too difficult for them to go to a judge anymore and get an order. So they're passing this new law, this cyber intelligence. What is it? Sharing Protection Act nonsense. We're going to be talking about that in a few minutes with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. A couple of items I want to try to squeeze in here. Oh, we're not going to have enough time. We're going to have to invoke the secret fourth hour again. Most independent ads for the 2012 election are from groups that don't disclose donors, says Dan Egan this week in the Washington Post. Nearly all of the independent advertising being aired for the 2012 general election campaign has come from interest groups that do not disclose their donors, suggesting that much of the political spending over the next 6 months will come from sources invisible to the public. Oh, do you think? Politically active nonprofit groups that do not reveal their funding sources have spent $28.5 million on advertising related to the November presidential matchup. $28.5 million. And this is April. And nobody knows who it actually is because it's all in secret. Wow. So that's $28.5 million, or about 90% of the total through last Sunday, according to this Washington Post. 90% of the total spent on this race has come through secret sources. Welcome to America. Most of the ad spending has come in swing states from, quote-unquote, conservative groups that criticize President Obama's policies, the data shows. Secretive groups have spent tens of millions more targeting congressional races, again, mainly in support of Republicans, according to the Washington Post. Well, we've got some late-breaking news today that is probably good news. And I see that actually Ben from Minneapolis is calling in about this. And I don't think I'm going to hang in there if you want, Ben. I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to the phones here for a bit. But I can. This is probably what you wanted to talk about. The FEC disclosure loophole. Well, let's see. A court ruling, put it this way. A court ruling requiring non-disclosing political groups, including the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Koch brothers American for Prosperity, to disclose their donors is one step closer to going into effect after a district court refused to stay its ruling in the face of an appeal. On March 30th, a district court ruled in Van Hollen versus Federal Elections Commission that a loophole in the FEC rules that allowed certain independent groups, group campaign efforts to keep private the name of donors was invalid. In other words, the FEC misinterpreted the rule, misinterpreted what the Citizens United decision, misinterpreted the Supreme Court. So they wrote the rule incorrectly, basically. It was invalid, and it needs to be rewritten or reset to the original language, which does not allow these donors to remain secret. That's really good news. Now, the Republicans on the Federal Election Commission, they wanted to see this appealed because they don't want, they want to help their pals. They want to help the Koch boys keep all of their money secret, all of their donors secret. Remember that story I wrote on the secret Koch brothers tapes that I was able to acquire from their secret meeting? Yeah. They don't like this to get out. Nonetheless, so it looks like unless they can win this appeal, and so far they are not winning this appeal, if they do not win this appeal, these donors, Karl Rove's groups and all of that, these donors are going to have to be exposed unless they can come up with a different way to hide them. They're going to have to disclose who all of this money is coming from. Well, hot damn. Some good news for a change, huh? We've been fighting for that, by the way, and working with Van Hollen on this at protectourelections.org. That's a campaign of velvetrevolution.us, an organization that I helped to co-found. So please support our work there if you like. Protectourelections.org, because someone's got to. Now, who's going to protect the internet? We'll talk about that next. Brad, in from Molloy. Problem. Somebody's going to be watching you, and the government wants to make it easier to watch you. And, you know, I'm not really, when it comes to, you know, I hear all these right-wingers, they're always worried about, oh, the government's going to do this, they're going to take away my rights, my privacy. Of course, the right-wingers don't really care about that, otherwise they'd be up in arms about the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. But, of course, they're not. You know, I'm more worried, frankly, about the corporations. This is the worst of all worlds, it seems to me, this bill, because the corporations and the government get together to spy on you. We're going to be speaking momentarily with Dan Auerbach of the Electronic Frontier Foundation about CISPA. But let me just set it up for you this way. This is from Foreign Affairs. Yesterday, Rebecca McKinnon, soon after Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak was ousted from power last year, protesters stormed the Egyptian National Security Headquarters, in which police records are housed. Some Egyptians found files the authorities had compiled about them. Others uncovered files focusing on friends and colleagues. There were wiretape transcripts, reams of printouts of intercepted emails and mobile messages, communications once thought to be private. I have to remind you, this is in Egypt. As it turns out, American-made technology had helped Mubarak and his secret state collect, compile, and parse vast amounts of data about everyday citizens. The Egyptian government was using deep packet inspection technology purchased from Naris, a Sunnyvale, California-based firm owned by Boeing. The company's most successful product is Naris Insight, which, according to Naris's website, helps, quote, network and security operators obtain real-time situational awareness of the traffic traversing their networks. In short, the same technology not only assists network administrators in pursuing attackers and intruders, it can also help governments patrol their citizens' online activities. How nice. NARIS's core clients are the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the National Security Agency, but a good portion of the company's business comes from abroad. In 2005, NARIS signed a multi-million dollar licensing deal for the use of its technology with Egypt, Palestine, Saudi Arabia, and Libya. Noting that the NARIS case this week is particularly ironic as the White House announced new sanctions against Iran and Syria on Monday aimed at technology that Tehran and Damascus are using to target their own citizens. On Monday, President Barack Obama said of the internet and mobile technologies that they, quote, should be in place to empower citizens, not suppress them. Well, that's somewhat ironic, given the bill that is now moving through the House. It was approved yesterday in the House. It's heading to the Senate to be voted on soon, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act, which the White House has said it would veto, at least in its current form. Of course, they said the same thing about the NDAA that allows for U.S. citizens to be held without charges forever and so on and so forth. And then Barack Obama ended up signing it anyway. So pardon me if I don't trust him. But let's get an idea what the hell this CISPA is and what they're trying to do now. What have we done to deserve this? Well, we'll find out. I'm joined by Dan Auerbach. He's a staff technologist at the Electronic Frontier Foundation and formerly an engineer at Google, specializing in security. Hey, Dan, great to have you. Really appreciate it. Okay, help me out here. Talk me off this ledge, if you don't mind. What problem? Let's start it here. What problem is CISPA supposedly meant to cure? What's the nice way to look at this bill?
Surveillance technology being exported by U.S. companies, mm-hmm. and EFF is very concerned about that issue too. So for anyone who wants to follow up on that, you know, feel free to check out our website.
EFF.org. Yes, please do.
Yes, EFF.org. So turning to CISPA, well, it's being framed as a data sharing bill. Mm-hmm. So the idea is, oh, well, the NSA and companies can share data so that they can better defend against cyber threats.
From U.S. citizens?
It's very unclear about what sort of data, but yes, certainly it encompasses data of U.S. citizens,
so,
for instance, your emails.
Your emails. So in other words, since you were formerly an engineer at Google, you work at Google, you detect that I, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, I am some sort of a threat because I'm colluding with someone to make a denial of service attacks, or I'm a terrorist. What kind of information might a company like Google or any other corporation see that they would then want to share with the government?
Well, there are some examples which I think are actually very legitimate. For instance, if there is very kind of concise evidence that, for instance, a set of IP addresses is responsible for trying to intrude into your company's corporate network or something like that, sharing these kind of like very narrow facts about a particular attack mm-hmm. Sometimes can be helpful. And though I don't want to go so far as to say this legislation is necessary, which seems to be a default assumption on Capitol Hill, mm-hmm. I will, you know, certainly admit that there are situations in which sharing information doesn't seem like a bad idea.
So, like a major corporation is under some sort of denial of service attack, and they're able to track where it seems to be coming from. They might want to go to the government and say, "Hey, can you help us out here? It looks like this set of IP addresses is targeting us." They might want to do that. That could be. Am I understanding that? That could be a legitimate thing that a bill might be crafted to help with?
That's right. I would say for denial of service attacks, mm-hmm. it may be less convincing. I would say the more convincing thing are things like malware or mm-hmm. Penetrations, basically.
Okay. So there's somebody spying on my company, has come in, has stolen a bunch of files. Although, wouldn't that already fall under other bills that the FBI could?
Yes, Arguably, the sharing is allowed already. So okay. the reasons for this law are sort of unclear to begin with. There was a FOIA request by the ACLU about this very issue, what was being shared now. And as you might not be surprised to learn that basically no information was given as a result of that FOIA request.
So they won't tell you? Yeah.
We don't really know what information is being shared right now already.
Okay.
But if you let me turn to the big problems with the bill.
Yeah.
It's basically boils down to the fact that although there are kind of narrow use cases where this might make sense, the definitions of the bill are far too broad and the immunities granted to companies are far too expansive. So I think that's kind of the crux of the problems with the bill. I can go a bit more into that if you'd like.
Yeah, give me an idea. What sort of worry should I have? What's not a worst case scenario, but what is a case scenario that could happen that I should be concerned about with this bill?
Sure. Well, for a little background, we have an important privacy law called the Wiretap Act.
Mm-hmm.
The Wiretap Act makes it illegal for anyone to spy on your communications without an appropriate warrant.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if I were to put free Wi-Fi hotspots all around San Francisco, and then I were to kind of secretly record emails sent over those networks and transmit them to the NSA,
mm-hmm.
that would be illegal.
Okay, good.
But unfortunately, under CISPA, it likely would be legal. And the reason is because CISPA allows any self-protected entity to share data, quote, notwithstanding any other provision of law. So this effectively nullifies the Wiretap Act and any other privacy laws and allows the surveillance to take place so long as it relates to a so-called cybersecurity purpose. Now, if cybersecurity purpose were narrow, that would be one thing, but it's so broadly defined that you could say, oh, well, I heard there was a terrorist in San Francisco, and so I had to collect all these emails. I heard that this terrorist might have been using free Wi-Fi hotspots, so I thought that, you know, this related to a cybersecurity purpose.
So at that point, the company, the corporation in this case, goes to the government and says, hey, here's all this information. I think there might be trouble here. There could be a terrorist attack. There could be a cyber attack. Here's all the information. Here's a whole bunch of emails. Here's a whole bunch of places this person has been visiting. Here's all of this personal data that we have tracked on this person. They can go ahead and just give that to the government and say, hey, go find out what's going on here.
That's right. And what's really scary about it is that they can give not just kind of information about isolated incidents,
mm-hmm.
but rather the way the bill's language is set up, they can just, as a matter of course, just routinely hand over wide swaths of personal information. It wouldn't be surprising under this bill if internet service providers, for instance, handed over the contents of email to government for cybersecurity purposes.
And now, why would they want to do that?
Well, that's a good question. And the bill's backers insist that, oh, it's sharing. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's voluntary. The companies aren't forced to do anything. But we think there's a real concern if the NSA is kind of in the power seat, which they are in this
mm-hmm.
case, that they'll, over time, it will become kind of de facto involuntary.
They'll just start, well, I mean, because a lot of these companies do business with the government, and the government
exactly.
might say, hey, you know what, we'll make things a lot easier for you if you just start shoveling us over all of the data that is stored, all of the phone books that are stored on Google, all of the email. I note that the supporters of this bill, and I should say it's a Republican and a Democratic bill. They have co-sponsored in the House. Most of the supporters that passed the bill yesterday were Republicans, but it was about, I think, 33%, if I have those numbers in my head straight, were actually Democrats who supported this bill. So it seems to be kind of a bipartisan bill, and the proponents of the bill have said in the House they've put up letters of support from groups like the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers. Why would the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers want to support this CISPA cyber spying bill, Dan Auerbach?
Well, I'm not intimately familiar with that organization, so I can't claim to know their exact motivation. But I do think that, it, kind of as a general rule, companies love this because it does give this immunity, notwithstanding any other provision of law. So it doesn't hurt them at all. It just it kind of allows them to, should they choose to share things, they will be able to do so. I do think companies generally cite the part of the bill where the NSA can share information with them. Mm-hmm. That's the part of the bill that, by and large, we think is good. You know, we think if the NSA is privy to some information and wants to share it with companies in order to protect them, that's great. There are some restrictions that are in the bill that make it not perfect, but by and large, that part is good, and that's what companies usually cite. We think that they maybe aren't adequately concerned about, like, the quid pro quo creeping in terms of data sharing. And so that's something where we hope that companies realize, hey, this might not be just a completely voluntary scheme. We might be kind of compelled eventually to disclose data that we don't want to.
AT&T is in support. Boeing is in support. Of course, they sold that software to Egypt. They talked about it at the top of the hour. IBM, Facebook, Oracle. Stick around. Dan Auerbach from EFF. Brad from for the Mike Malloy. Stay with us. To the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy. And we're talking cyber spying and the CISPA, the Cyber Intelligence I can't even remember. Here, we'll get Dan will help me out. Dan, what is it again? Cyber?
I have trouble remembering myself sometimes.
Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. There we go.
There it is.
All right, speaking with Dan Auerbach of EFF.org, that's the Electronic Frontier Foundation, on what's wrong with CISPA. And frankly, it seems like what isn't wrong with CISPA. A couple of questions for you, Dan. When we see these bills, before this it was the, what was it, SOPA was the previous bill. I mean, they're always trying to do this. Here's my question. You're at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. You're in a coalition with a bunch of other folks who are opposing this CISPA. Did these guys in Congress consult you beforehand? Do they ever come and consult you and say, look, here's the problem we're trying to solve? You guys are civil liberties champions. You're also, you know, a bunch of tech geeks. Can't we work together to make a bill that actually does what is needed to be done but protects people's civil liberties? Do they come to you at all, to the experts on these kinds of bills?
Gee, that would be really nice, wouldn't it?
It would also make sense, wouldn't it?
It would make a lot of sense. Unfortunately, they don't. Seldom, very seldom are we consulted. And I think that's just a part of the reality of the power dynamics in Washington, unfortunately being what they are. And while CISPA and SOPA are very different bills, SOPA being about intellectual property enforcement and CISPA mm-hmm. being about surveillance, the one common thread is the fact that we weren't consulted in either case. And Washington just doesn't really listen to the interests of Internet users until we really scream hard at them.
I mean, do you feel, Dan, that the concerns that they at least claim that they're trying to solve by this bill, do you feel that it is something that that you could actually work with them on to craft a bill that could both meet their needs and protect the whatever privacy is left of the citizenry on the Internet?
Absolutely. I think that could definitely happen. And I think the way would be for us to have a more transparent debate about cybersecurity. So as I said, the definitions are so broad. You know, you can give kind of individual examples that make sense, but until we have a better idea of the sort of attacks that they're talking about and what the actual problem is, we can't even start to do that because we don't know how to kind of narrowly tailor the bill to solve those problems.
And they don't tell you what the problems are that they're trying to solve?
Not at all. It's this kind of generic fear-mongering about, oh, we're under attack by China. Isn't China so scary? And there's really no information provided that kind of backs that. In fact, there have been studies that show, so there's a thing called Einstein, which is an intrusion detection, mm-hmm. intrusion prevention system that the government's been using on its own systems for some time. And there's been kind of trials where they've tried to deploy it in the private sector. And there's a peer-reviewed study by Whit Diffie and others that basically say, hey, this doesn't work well. It's not a good idea. This won't make us safer. So if anything, the only publicly available information would suggest that, well, by passing this sort of law, we might be not helping ourselves, but actually making the situation worse.
Oh, well, that would be a shock. I mean, I'm looking at the list of people in your coalition opposing this bill, Dan Auerbach, and we only got about a minute left here, but, you know, I see American Civil Liberties Union, American Library Association, Bill of Rights Defense Committee, Free Press, Open the Government, Private Rights Clearinghouse, Reporters Without Borders, a bunch of progressive organizations. Are there any of these right-wing anti-big government groups, you know, these folks who claim that the government is taking your rights away? Because I noticed that it's the majority is Republicans in support of this. Do you have any Republican groups who are saying, no, this is the very big government intrusion that we have feared? We oppose this bill?
Absolutely, there are. So I don't have the list right in front of me. So I unfortunately don't know if I'll be able to give you an answer.
Well,
that's
if we don't know their names, that's fine. I want to know that they're there because these guys pretend they're against Big Brother. They're against big government. You know, but when it comes to these bills, it seems like it's, you know, Republicans who love this. At least there's a few Democrats who are against it. At least Barack Obama is pretending he's going to veto it. Anyway,
no, that's a very good point. And I do think that although there is some support, and the Cato Institute is one organization
good.
I would cite, from kind of the libertarian-leaning community, there really isn't enough. And I agree with you that...
Dan, I got to get out. I appreciate it. I'm coming up on the clock. Dan Auerbach from EFF.org. Thanks, Dan. More straight
Thank
ahead.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you. Welcome back, Truth Seekers, to the Mike Malloy Show. It's Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. Mike and Kathy have the night off. They'll be back Monday. Never fear. This won't hurt a bit. Glad you could join us. I am, of course, your friendly citizen investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, broadcasting from the left coast tonight, as the sun sets on the left coast here in beautiful downtown Burbank, where we are glad you could join us. Stop by our chat room at bradblog.com. Looks like the famous, or should I say infamous, Jeannie Dean has just stopped by. Good to see you there, Jeannie. And you can also reach us at 877-520-1150 if I can get to the phones. I promise in the next hour it's going to all phones. Well, maybe a visit from Des. But other than that, all phones at 877-520-1150. You can also tweet me at the Brad Blog. Okay, and just to close out what I had, we ran out of time there at the hard break when I was speaking with Dan Auerbach from the Electronic Frontier Foundation about the CISPA bill. You know, the point that these big government Republicans, meaning the ones that are afraid of big government, that he says the Tea Party is underrepresented in this. Oh, do you think? Hey, Tea Party, I thought you didn't like big government. Why are you cool with big government working together with corporations to read your email, to spy on you, to avoid even having to go to a court of law? Look, they could have done it anyway. Pretty much now we just take out the judge, and now they could just work hand in hand for all of your emails, all of your phone books, see who you're talking to. You guys cool with that? You Tea Partiers cool with that? You pretend conservatives? You pretend anti-big government conservatives? You're not conservative. You're not anti-big government. Otherwise, you'd be out there in D.C. raising holy hell. You'd be working with the Electronic Frontier Foundation to shut this down. To shut down CISPA. You can go to cyberspying.eff.org to get more info on this and to find out which congressman, which senator you need to get in touch with if you care about your rights. You know, I don't think that Republicans do. I don't think the Tea Partiers do. Clearly they don't when it comes to voting, because it is Republicans all over the country who are keeping people from voting this year. And at the bottom of the hour, I'm going to be speaking with Joyce Block, the 90-year-old grandmother-in-law of a Pennsylvania Borough Council president, who she has been voting for 70 years without a problem until the Republicans in Pennsylvania just last month passed a bill to keep her from voting. Because, you see, she's never had a driver's license. She's 90 years old. She's never missed an election. And they'll say, oh, well, you need a driver's license for everything, to get on a plane. No, you don't. Let me say that again. You don't need a photo ID to get on an airplane. Because the airplane companies, what do we call them? The airlines. Thank you. The airlines don't require a photo ID. Yes, your life will be easier if you have one. But trust me, next time you're going to the airport, you want to have a little fun, tell them, no, I don't have a photo ID. No, I don't feel like giving you one. Find out what happens. You're not going to get thrown off that plane. You're not. They're going to. There's other ways. Your life will be easier if you have one. But they will make other accommodations for you. They do not want. The airlines do not want to turn away 21 million Americans who don't have photo ID. On the other hand, Republicans do want to turn away 21 million Americans who don't have photo ID, because most of them happen to be elderly women like Joyce Block, 90 years old from Pennsylvania, who we'll talk to in the after the bottom of the hour. Because she happens to vote Democratic. Oh, and elderly, not just the elderly, but minorities. Of course, minorities. Can't have them going out and voting for Democrats. The poor, the urban dwellers who don't have driver's licenses, they're not going to, many of them are not going to be able to vote this year. Because in state after state, Republicans are passing these bills claiming it's to stop voter fraud at the polling place, when there is almost no voter fraud at the polling place. That is the only thing that photo ID restrictions at the polling place can stop, is in-person impersonation at the polling place. And yet I've been asking proponents of these bills, show me one example of a case of voter fraud that happened at the polling place that would have been stopped by polling place photo ID restrictions. And they can't come up with, they'll show, oh, look, Acorn did voter registration fraud. Well, no, that was Acorn workers, not Acorn themselves. And photo ID restrictions at the polling place have nothing to do with voter registration fraud. They have nothing to do with absentee ballot fraud. And that's where most of the voter fraud happens. Now, election fraud, that's a different story. Insider election fraud, gaming voting machines, gaming the registration lists. Pretty much what Republicans are doing here, but they figured out how to make it legal for now. In Pennsylvania, where they've just passed this new photo ID restriction, a crucial state, by the way, for Democrats, with its now 20 electoral votes, it had 21 in 2008, the college ID cards, most of them will not work. The voter ID law that was passed last month, according to the Morning Call in Pennsylvania, the voter ID law included student identification cards issued by Pennsylvania colleges on a short list of acceptable forms of identification, as long as those IDs have expiration dates. And the problem is, most college IDs don't. Some of the state's largest schools, including Penn State, Temple, and State System of Higher Education Colleges, such as Kutztown and East Stroudsburg Universities, they all issue student IDs that can't be used at the polls under the new law. DeSales University and Cedar Crest and Lafayette Colleges, they're all in the same boat. And, of course, the same goes for most of the state's private colleges and universities, says Mary Young, Director of Government Relations for the Association of Independent Colleges and Universities of Pennsylvania. So you saw Barack Obama out there slow jamming on the Jimmy Fallon show. Oh, the kids, they love it. The students, they love it. Problem is, a lot of those students ain't going to be able to vote if these bills stay intact before November. And that's the point, and that's the hope, and that's what the Republicans are trying to do. And you'll hear Joyce Block, 90 years old, talking about that in a little bit. But we've talked in the past about 87-year-old Ruth L. Frank, an elected town official in Brokaw, Wisconsin. She would have had to come up with more than $200 for her free ID in the Badger State to vote under the Republicans' new laws there, because she was born at home. She never had a birth certificate. She never had a driver's license. And so she could pay $20 to have a birth certificate made. $20, that's a poll tax. But she could pay to do that. Problem is, her name is misspelled in the state registry. So she'd have to pay $200 to change her name in the state registry, to change the typos. So, yes, her free ID will only cost more than $200. This woman, who is a state official, 87-year-old Ruth L. Frank in Wisconsin. How about 77-year-old Betty Jones up there in Wisconsin? It'd be impossible for her to vote under the Republicans' new law because she has a driver's license, but it's from Ohio, where she recently moved with her daughter. And she doesn't have a birth certificate, and officials in Ohio can't seem to find her birth certificate that she would need to get her ID to vote. Betty Jones, 77 years old, is screwed in Wisconsin. Luckily, the League of Women Voters went to court. The NAACP went to court. Two separate cases, both of them. Judges found that in Wisconsin, the state constitution denies the right to vote to be taken away. Lucky folks in Wisconsin, because not all state constitutions say that. And Wisconsin is one of the states that is not protected by the Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So the DOJ can't write in, at least not under Section 5. They could do it under Section 2, but it's harder to prove Section 2 than Section 5. This all gets into the weeds a bit. But the DOJ has been able to stop the law so far, one of these photo ID restriction laws in South Carolina and in Texas. But they haven't gone into Wisconsin. Luckily, that has, for now, been stopped in advance of the upcoming recall elections there, where Republicans were desperate to get this photo ID restriction in place. Desperate to get it in place. To keep those minorities from voting, to keep those elderly, pesky old Democrats like 87-year-old Ruth L. Frank and 77-year-old Betty Jones from being able to cast their vote. Not to mention the minorities, not to mention the students, you know, people who vote Democratic. Take a quick break here. We'll come back with more on this and more before I speak with the 90-year-old Joyce Block from Pennsylvania, the newest state to disenfranchise its legal voters. Brad in from Molloy. Stay with us.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown. And accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, so you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are a-changing.
One, two, three!
Come right along.
Yeah, there you go. The times are changing. For the worse, it seems like. By the way, I see we got some folks in the bradblog.com chat room listening on KJFK, our Reno affiliate. Glad we're broadcasting loud and clear out there in Reno. Hey, guys in Nevada, guess what? Your entire state uses 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting machines. Do you care? Ask me about that sometime. All right, going back to Pennsylvania, a couple of things going on in Pennsylvania. Other than the Republicans who passed this bill, is this photo ID restriction bill. And please stop calling it voter ID. Voter ID is not a problem. You know, we already have voter ID written into the federal Help America Vote Act. If you don't register in person, first time you go to the polls, you'll have to show ID. Reasonable ID. It's okay. Most states already ask for ID. Bank statements, paycheck stubs, you know, stuff that allow people to vote rather than restrict them from voting. I'll give you an example. Out in South Carolina, there used to be three different things you could present to vote in South Carolina: a driver's license, a state issued driver's license, a state issued photo ID, or a voter registration card. Pretty reasonable. Pretty strict, but pretty reasonable. Everyone, if you're a registered voter, you'd be sent a voter registration card. So the bill in South Carolina did nothing but remove that third option, the voter registration card. You know, the one that they send you, the one that the county sends you. You can no longer use that. Now you have to use a driver's license or a photo ID issued by the state. This was meant to keep you from voting. This is not meant to protect against voter fraud. And thankfully, in this case, the DOJ shut that one down. Because based on South Carolina's own numbers, they found that African Americans, legally registered African Americans, were 20% more likely to lack the type of ID required under this new bill than were white voters. In Texas, the DOJ thankfully shut it down because they determined that based on Texas's own data, that legally registered Hispanics were anywhere from 46 to 120% more likely than non-Hispanics to be lacking that photo ID. And that some would have to drive more than 150 miles to get their free ID at the DMV. 150 miles in Texas for the free ID that you need to figure out how to do since you don't have a driver's license. Good luck with that. Now, in Pennsylvania, they've also put the folks on notice there. This out today from Demos and Project Vote and Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. They've sent a pre-litigation notice to Pennsylvania, to the Secretary of State there, charging that the state is failing to provide low-income residents with a legally mandated opportunity to even register to vote under the National Voter Registration Act. They're supposed to make voter registration forms available at government offices, welfare offices, state DMVs, and so forth. State public assistance agencies are supposed to provide registration services to their clients. And they note that the number of voter registration applications submitted at Pennsylvania public assistance offices decreased by 93% in recent years. From more than 59,000 voters in 95 and 96, just after this bill was passed, to just 4,000 in 2009 and 2010. 4,000 registered voters. These are the tricks they use. These are the tricks they use to keep you from voting. That is the plan. And that's what they're trying to do to 90-year-old Joyce Block in Pennsylvania. I spoke with her earlier this week on I do a show on Wednesdays out here on the Pacifica Radio Network in Los Angeles, KPFK. And I spoke to her after we learned that she was being denied this so-called free photo ID for the first time in her life. For 70 years, she was going to be denied the right to vote in the state of Pennsylvania. I know they talk about the horse race 24/7 on your cable television. They don't talk about this. This is what is going to affect the presidential election this year, congressional elections this year, and all the races below that. This is the fight to vote. Talking to Joyce Block next. Brad in from Molloy.
Feeling sweet feeling drops from my fingers. Cannon through the bathroom window. Let you buy a silver spoon. But now she sucks up the man water. Now the banks over old lagoon.
Welcome back to your Mike Molloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. All right, we're speaking about the newest assault on voters and the fight to vote, now moving to Pennsylvania, which Barack Obama won by 55% in 2008. Now the Republicans are in charge. They put in place a polling place photo ID restriction bill to keep Democratic-leaning voters from voting, at least in my opinion. And so this week, earlier this week, I spoke with Joyce Block, the 90-year-old resident of Doylestown, Pennsylvania, who's been voting there for 70 years, and her son, Det Anson, the Doylestown, Pennsylvania Borough Council president, her grandson-in-law. He told the story at a Bucks County meeting earlier last week. And I spoke to both of them about Joyce Block's fight to vote in an interview earlier. Here's some of that interview. Welcome, both of you.
Good afternoon, Brad.
And Joyce, are you with us as well there?
Yes, I am.
All right, there she is. Okay, Det, give us the background. Explain to us what it was that you told the folks at the Bucks County Commission last week.
Well, when we heard this voter ID law go through and heard the requirements, we knew that Joyce was going to have challenges because she didn't have a photo ID. She did not have a Pennsylvania driver's license. So we went and the family members, we dug through everything and found what we thought were all the necessary pieces of information. We found her birth certificate. Even though she was born at home, we managed to locate that. We saw her Social Security card, her marriage certificate, utility bills, the deed to her house. Everything you would need to prove residency, who she was. We spoke with our local state senator's office. They said, yes, you have all the information you need. So we took that information. We loaded Joyce up in the car, made the half-hour trip to the local DMV. And when we got there, we presented this information. We presented all the material. And the person behind the counter looked at the marriage certificate and noted that it was in Hebrew. And because it was in Hebrew, they would not accept it. And with that, Joyce's birth certificate, her Social Security card were in her maiden name.
Mm-hmm.
All of her proof of residency were in her married name. And she could not prove that she was Joyce Block. They said, well, you have your maiden name. The suggestion by the person at the PennDOT office there was to have Joyce change all of her residency information, all of her utility bills, back to her maiden name so she could get a photo ID.
Oh, my God. So they wanted her to change the deed of her house. How much would that cost to make all of those changes?
That would be incredible cost, yes.
For this so-called free ID. Now, let me turn to Joyce here. Joyce, you're 91 years old, which means I hope you don't mind. You were born when? What year were you born?
Well, no, I'm 90.
Okay, I didn't mean to add a year. I'm gonna blame the Philadelphia Inquirer for that.
I hope to be here a lot longer.
Indeed. So, what year were you born? And I ask this for a specific reason. 1922. So you were born just 2 years after women received the right to vote in this country, as ratified.
Yes.
In the 19th Amendment. And now you have been voting, is it true, for 70 years you haven't missed an election?
Never missed an election.
Do you recall who the first president of the United States was you voted for?
Yes. That would be, I think that was President Truman.
Truman? Now, so you have not missed a vote.
You had to be 21.
Oh, that's right. You had to be 21 to vote back then before it was raised, lowered to 18. Correct. And so you haven't missed a race. Were you shocked and surprised by this turn of events? Did you know this was coming? Had you been following this law as it was moving through the legislature in Pennsylvania?
Yes, I'm a political junkie. Oh. I'm an activist at this age, and I was horrified. And when I discussed this at a commissioner's meeting, it wasn't just about me. I have a marvelous family, and I knew I had the support of them and the help of them. I was concerned about all the minorities that are going to be affected by this. And there was no action taken. I don't know why you need an ID. I've lived here all my life, all these years. I mean, where are we that you walk down the street and somebody's going to ask me for my ID?
Well, they are now.
Yes, of course.
This is a version of Papers, Please.
Yeah. I hope the law is rescinded.
And have you ever had any other problems in your 70 years of being able to cast your vote? Anything like this during all of the years?
Never.
This is, I find this story to be remarkable. Det, tell me what happened in 2010 when you helped your grandmother-in-law get to the vote back in 2010.
Well, she was in the hospital, and she's never missed an election. And we wanted to get her an absentee ballot because she wasn't able to get out of the hospital. But to get an emergency absentee ballot, you had to provide photo ID. So what we did is, family got together and we managed to locate a wheelchair, and we actually wheeled her out of the hospital and got her to the polling place so she could vote in person, and then returned her to the hospital. And that's how committed she's been. I mean, and voting is important to Ma Joyce and, with the family here. And I'm fortunate enough to be married to her granddaughter for 18 years. And politics are part of Ma Joyce's life, but importantly, the civic participation is critical.
When you told this story at the Bucks County Board of Commissioners meeting last week, what was the response there? Were there other people who were telling similar stories? Were you guys the only one? And what was the response to it?
I didn't realize that there was an African-American woman in the audience when I got up and talked about other minorities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how it was accepted. We asked for what we did want. Was some sort of if they were going to do this, a task force to go into the inner city in Philly and show the people and talk to the people and tell them what was needed. So far, nothing has been done.
You've
seen reluctance on a task force because, effectively, Joyce not voting by some views is the law working. And when you talk about voter suppression, and in Pennsylvania we have the state of the art in voter suppression, that there's not an interest in government to educate people on this requirement. So you're going to have in November all these folks coming to the polls who will not be able to vote or file provisional ballots, yet not have the paperwork to back that up.
Have you been in touch with the ACLU or the League of Women Voters, or the DOJ for that matter? What have they said to you, Joyce?
As a matter of fact, the young man that is the head of the ACLU here came to the house, and I talked to him about it. And, of course, they want to sue the state, and so they need plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somehow or other, by the way, I did get my ID, my voter ID today, and it's a temporary one. And I have to, and I don't know whether you're aware of this, but in the Pennsylvania, I have to get another voter ID in 3 years because it will not be valid. In other words, I won't have a valid voter ID to vote in 4 years.
So you were able to get...
And it's not free. In 3 years, when I get another voter ID, it is going to cost. It isn't free to vote anymore.
Today they issued it's a temporary voter ID that was issued today. And so Joyce went up today to the DMV once again, made the trek up there. They issued this temporary ID, and they will then, within a couple of weeks, she'll receive a photo ID card that she has to go back up to the DMV. Because with this temporary ID, they still take all, took all of her information, and they're going to validate it. So she will be three trips here before having an ID. And she's lucky to have someone transport her there. Yeah. She's lucky to have the family.
Well, that's, you know, and that's what I hear this all the time. Oh, well, why don't they just go? You can get these things for free at the DMV. And I have to explain, well, look, these are people who don't have driver's licenses in the first place. They don't drive. You said, Det, that you had to drive 30 minutes to the DMV. Now, I used to live out in that area right out by you, right outside Bucks County. Near Hellertown out there. I know how far apart the towns are spread. So where is the DMV? It's not, there's not one right in Doylestown. You have to drive to another city?
It's in Dublin, PA, on a heavy traffic section of a road called 313.
Right. I know 313. So you have to drive 30 minutes to this place, and it's going to be three times before you'll get this so-called free ID.
Yes.
And you,
I mean, we're not silly. We know why this is being done. And I wish there was a much big outcry about it. I mean, our pundits don't mention it.
Why is it? Well, tell me then. You have the opportunity to do so. You've got the public airwaves here, Joyce. Why is this being done as you see it?
Oh, to disenfranchise the people that usually vote Democratic. I mean, that's who they're targeting, and they're afraid of the Democratic vote.
And is there a voter fraud epidemic in Pennsylvania that
not
you guys
not at all? And there's no voter fraud anyplace. I mean, the amount of voter fraud, the only voter fraud was in Florida in the 2008 election.
Well, actually, even there, it wasn't voter fraud. It was election fraud. It was done by insiders.
Fraud.
Yeah. Well,
right.
And there is, by the way, because I've heard this a criticism, there is some voter fraud. Normally, however, it's via absentee ballot or it's a voter registration fraud. The proponents of these bills cannot cite to me, I've been asking for the longest time, cite to me a single historic incidence of somebody going in, impersonating someone else at the polling place and voting under their name. That is incredibly rare. And the folks who are passing these laws know that damn well. Tom Corbett, the governor, came out and lied when he was asked about this bill. He said, here's a direct quote. He said, when some of the precincts come in with 112% reporting, you have to scratch your head and say, how does that happen? Well, here's how it happens, Governor. You made it up.
Yes. Yep. He made it up. That was part of my interview with Joyce Block that I did earlier this week. And I'll play the rest of it in a moment after we get back from this break. 90-year-old Joyce Block, who's fighting for her vote out there in Pennsylvania, where the Republicans are trying to keep her from voting. What Tom Corbett, the governor out there, said about precincts that had voter fraud, 112% turnout. I checked with Mary Beth Kuznick, the founder of Vote PA, the nonpartisan election integrity watchdog organization. They've been fighting to improve the electoral system out there for years in Pennsylvania and to help stop election fraud, the greatest threat against our elections. She told me that, quote, I know of no certified results that have ever said there was 112% turnout. That's ludicrous. In other words, Governor Tom Corbett, the Republican governor out there who signed this bill last month in March, came out and lied to the people of Pennsylvania about the reasons for this bill. Tom Corbett, short of evidence to support his 112% turnout claim, Governor Tom Corbett is a liar. All right, we're going to take a quick break here, come back with the rest of my interview with Joyce Block and her grandson-in-law, Det Anson, of Doylestown, Pennsylvania, on their fight to vote, her fight to vote after 70 years. You're listening to Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. In for Mike Malloy. Stay with us.
Spoke up, wasn't when, although I wasn't there. He said I was his friend.
Welcome back. This is your Mike Malloy Show. I am your
fill-in guest host on the Friday night, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. We were speaking with 90-year-old Joyce Block from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. I was speaking to her earlier this week about her fight to vote in Pennsylvania, where they've instituted this polling place photo ID restriction. And despite all the documents she had taken into the Pennsylvania DMV, PennDOT, they denied her her supposedly free ID after her half-hour drive to get there. Thankfully, her son, her grandson-in-law, Det Anson, who is the borough council president in Doylestown, they denied her that ID. Well, luckily, the day I spoke with her on Wednesday, she received a temporary ID because so much noise had been made. And we made, you can read about it at bradblog.com. It was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Here's the rest of my interview with 90-year-old Joyce Block and her grandson-in-law, Det Anson, asking them about their temporary ID that they were just issued. Joyce, why, or Det, you can tell me, why did you guys suddenly receive a temporary ID after you had such a difficult time getting one in the first place? What has changed between your initial attempt and now?
Well, I think Joyce's story has gotten some visibility, mm-hmm. and that helped mobilize to action. But I mean, one of the things that Joyce benefits from, I mean, I'm an elected official myself. So I'm hitting up all these folks in elected office. My office happens to be adjacent to the state senator's office, and I made my presence known in there and trying to get this resolved. And, you know, we moved mountains to get Joyce this temporary ID.
Mm-hmm.
But who is helping move the mountains for others? And that's the part that concerns me is when you look at this law, I mean, Brad, your program and what you do, we all care about the integrity of the vote. We mm-hmm. care about how those ballots are cast, that they're cast legitimately. There's perhaps no greater audience that cares about that. And what I look at this law, and that there's no accommodation for someone in Joyce's circumstance. There's no accommodation for that person with a student ID without an expiration date. That the law, by being in place, directly took Joyce's right to vote away. And for those folks who are affected, we know Joyce's story because she's got a wonderful, supportive family. But for those folks who don't have that support, who don't have that, what's their story going to be in November?
Who don't have a nice grandson-in-law to drive them 30 minutes to the DMV three different times, and who may, frankly, not be well enough to get in a car and drive to the DMV, they need to be able to vote. And folks who, you know, follow what I do at BradBlog know that for me, this is not a partisan issue. Yes, I go after the Republicans in this case because it is the Republicans who are passing these laws. But I will fight for anybody's right to vote. This is the most fundamental right that we have. Without it, none of the others matter. And we are seeing it under assault this year like we have never seen it before. Joyce, before I let you go, you said you heard from the ACLU folks. Will you be joining in a lawsuit, as far as you know, be a plaintiff in one of those lawsuits?
I will do anything possible to help the ACLU.
Well, thank you. At 90 years of age, and I am sorry that I added 1 year to your age. I'm going to fix that at the blog.
That gives me another year to go.
There you go. 90 years young, Joyce Block from Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Her son and her grandson-in-law, Det Anson, the Doylestown, Pennsylvania Borough Council president. You guys were very lucky. Joyce, you're very lucky that you had Det as a public official who was able to speak up and help you in this fight. And I join you in worrying about all of the other folks who don't have that advantage.
That is important, and we fight for them, too.
We do indeed. Joyce, thank you for the fight, making noise, and Det, thank you as well. I hope both of you will stay in touch with me as this moves forward, and I'm going to do my best to raise holy hell on your behalf this year.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys. That was my interview with Joyce Block and Det Anson. That is the fight that's going on all around the country. That is the fight that is going to make the difference this November, no matter who it is you're voting for. And not just in the presidential election, but in the congressional elections, the state races, the ballot initiatives, the fight to vote. Joyce Block is not alone. We've been reporting on folks like Joyce all over the country who are seeing their right to vote taken away from them. And that's going to make the difference this November. All right. If you want to talk about that or anything else, I got a lot more to talk about in the next hour. But I'd love to hear from you as well. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. 877-520-1150. Maybe even Desi Doyen will join us for some green news. I got a whole lot of other... We are going to have to invoke the secret fourth hour of the Mike Malloy Show. Just so affiliates now know that. All right. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. A big hour straight ahead. 877-520-1150. Get in line right now. On to see Desi Doyen dancing here in the studios.
Bad dancing.
No, it's good dancing. Actually, we do have the folks at Current TV saw you dancing because, you know, these cameras in here are on 24/7.
Hi, everybody.
There you go. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman in for Mike. They're on a Molly day for the night, but they'll be back with you Monday. Until then, you got me for one more hour, and it is your hour to use your public airwaves if you can get into them at 877-520-1150. I know you got stuff you want to talk about. Anything you want to talk about, the stuff we talked about that last hour, the fight to vote, stuff we talked about in the first hour about the secret money. What is it, 90% of the... 90% of the total that's been spent so far in this stupid election campaign has been secret from secret donors. $28.5 million just so far on advertising. On advertising. The dirty tricks that cost extra. So our phone number is 877-520-1150. You can also come on by the chat room. It's kind of quiet there tonight. Four Earth is in there. Dez was in there. Now she's in here in the studio with me because we're going to talk some green news in a moment.
Yep.
And you can get me on the Twitters at the Brad Blog. 877-520-1150 is your number. Now, I mentioned the secret money that is dominating the 2012 election. That may be coming to an end with this breaking news today that the FCC looks like they may be forced to change the rule that allowed this secret money to happen. Looks like they misunderstood the Supreme Court's ruling on this. And if they can't win this appeal, they're going to have to immediately disclose all of these donors, these, you know, the folks who donate to Koch Brothers Americans for Prosperity and Karl Rove's, what's his stupid thing called? Crossroads GPS and all the donors to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all the people who are putting money into political ads. That's very good news if that holds. We'll see if it does. Ben from Minneapolis had called in to talk about that in the first hour. He has called back now, so I want to get straight to him before we do some green news. Dez, if you can hold on.
No problem.
All right. Let's get to Ben. Hey, Ben, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Hi. Actually, yeah, the way I saw it on the PBS news, they were saying that the ads, the advertising rates for the TV stations were going to be posted on the internet. So what you told me is even better news than what I had. And I also heard a few weeks ago on Bill Moyers that if you're a third party advertiser on TV, the TV stations do not have to accept those ads. They only have to accept the ads of the candidates themselves. Is that true?
Yes, it is largely true. Yeah, they can turn down ads, and they have done it before. They used to do this all the time after 9/11. Remember that, Des? If there was an ad that was critical of George W. Bush, it was.
Oh yeah, they were
down,
turning down ads left and right.
Right.
And they said, and they were, and they had somebody on there, and they said that the factcheck.org is going to start a site called Flack Check, where you can check the accuracy of the ads, because there were some ads that some politicians were running in Ohio, so people called up the TV station, they stopped running them, so I was wondering if people could use that as a defense when they're out there seeing this crap on TV.
Well, actually, there is, in Ohio, you can't, there is, and I think it's a state rule, because it came into play in this Krikorian case, Gene Schmidt v. Krikorian, where you actually, you can't lie in the state of Ohio, I'm told, about your opponent. I don't think that's true anywhere else. I think you can lie all you want at will, unfortunately. But they made that illegal in Ohio, at least as far as you can take someone to court for that. And by the way, that's how the all that Sybil Edmonds and information ended up coming out, because they called her to testify. That's how her story got out, that you can now check out in her new book, Classified Woman, which I have a copy of and no one else does.
And one last thing.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I heard on Norman Goldman's show yesterday that they're trying to pass a law in California, get it on the ballot, about regulating the health care rates. And they said they had like a 500,000 and they need 200,000 more, I guess, in the next 3 weeks or something.
To who's that? To do what?
There's a health care initiative that I guess is supposed to go on the California ballot for November, where they're trying to regulate the insurance rates for health care stuff.
All right.
And I guess they've got 500,000 signatures on there.
Oh, I see. And they need more. Oh, well, so maybe they're talking about single payer out here in California. That'd be cool.
That would be great if they would do it. Yeah. If it starts in California, it would spread.
Yes, it would indeed. Thanks, Ben. I do appreciate your call and calling back twice. Really do appreciate it. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
No problem.
All right, brother. Let me get to Des. Do we have time? Can we do the green news here before we have to go to a break? We got plenty of time. We can pull this up. Yeah, let's do it, right?
All right.
Do it?
Do it quick.
All right. Well, Des is here with me live, but this is the latest Green News Report. When we come back, by the way, your calls, eight more of your calls, 877-520-1150. Hit it, D-Man.
I've heard worse. You liar.
Come on, you pansy.
Just a flesh wound.
Britain smacked by extreme weather whiplash.
It will do a lot to stimulate the world economy.
Secretary Chu talks sexy, sexy energy efficiency. Agent Orange Corn, Dow Chemical says yes, please. Plus...
So I've called on Congress to prevent this from happening.
Oh, yeah.
Slow jamming the news. How about slow walking climate change?
All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Can liberals and conservatives find common ground? Yes, if the conservatives can drill for oil on it.
Sounds about right. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Tez, just a quick weather note. In Death Valley this week, the temperature reached a record 113 degrees, the hottest April temperature ever on record in these United States.
Yep, it's more wacky, wacky, wacky weather ahead.
Just a coincidence, of course. In March, we had more than 15,000 weather records broken. But let's look the other way, shall we?
Sure, we'll have more on that in a moment. But first...
It's what we call in the United States a no-brainer. It will save your citizens money and your country energy.
The world must boost development of clean energy and energy efficiency to stimulate the global economy and mitigate climate change. That's the message from energy ministers from around the world at the Clean Energy Ministerial Conference in London this week. Our very own U.S. Secretary of Energy, the Nobel Prize-winning physicist Stephen Chu, pushed other countries to follow through on their commitments.
If you think about energy efficiency, there's a tremendous opportunity to build an infrastructure that literally could be twice as efficient as the one that was built in the previous century.
And the only thing that's more exciting than talking about infrastructure is hearing Secretary Chu
talk about infrastructure.
You know, but he is right. Energy waste accounts for about a third of global carbon emissions. So improving energy efficiency is really, truly the low-hanging fruit and would actually save consumers $1 trillion over the next 20 years. But for the U.S., in addition to providing funding and personnel for these new international programs to deploy clean energy around the world, Secretary Chu also called for a new international testing standard to make it possible to build energy efficiency into all new appliances and all new infrastructure being built all around the world, especially for developing countries. While the energy ministers meet in London, extreme spring whiplash is hitting the rest of the UK 1 week after instituting nationwide water restrictions due to a record drought. British officials are now handing out sandbags to combat flash floods across the UK as a month's worth of rain fell in 24 hours amid a week-long torrential downpour. Flash floods are overwhelming riverbanks and flood controls because the dry ground is too hard now to absorb the intense rainfall.
And yet, with all of these records and with all of this insane extreme weather, as we talked about earlier this week, the coverage on the Sunday shows of climate change has gone from more than 60 minutes in 2009 down to 20 minutes in 2010, now about 15 minutes in 2011. The worse things get, the less the mainstream corporate media seems to talk about that.
We've reported before on the disturbing rise of super weeds now plaguing American farmers after an egregious overuse of Monsanto's Roundup herbicide across the U.S. and the world. It's caused weeds to develop resistance to Roundup many years earlier than was predicted. Now, big agriculture wants to repeat that process all over again with an old chemical called 2,4-D, an ingredient in the infamous defoliant Agent Orange. Critics are urging the USDA to deny a proposal from Dow Chemical to approve a new genetically modified corn that they warn is a time bomb that will only lead to a repeat of the vicious cycle of superweeds all over again, a chemical arms race, they say, that nature will win.
So we're going to put Agent Orange on our farm crops?
Well, it's an ingredient of Agent Orange, which is said to not be the toxic part of Agent Orange.
I see. What could possibly go wrong?
Important to note, the public comment period ends this Friday. Make your voice heard at regulations.gov.
And that's, of course, even if you're in favor of Agent Orange on our farm crops.
Finally, President Obama mentions climate change. After slow jamming the news this week on Late Night with Jimmy Fallon, President Obama finally started talking about climate change in a new interview in Rolling Stone. This after failing to mention climate change at all in his State of the Union address this year and in his Earth Day proclamation. Oh, if only he would slow jam the news on climate change.
For some reason, I don't think his mention of climate change in Rolling Stone is going to get quite the attention of his slow jam in the news on Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, yeah.
For more on all of our stories today and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves with the Green News Report. We rely on you, at least until we get our own super PAC. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Slow ride indeed. Oh, take your time, Des. What's the rush on this whole climate change thing anyway? Who cares? All right, listen, can you stick around for a sec, Des?
Of course,
I got a story I want to ask you about. If you want to get in, 877-520-1150 is our phone number. 877-520-1150. I got a lot to get to, but I would also love to hear from you. So give us a call. And you're listening to The Mike Malloy Show. Brad, in for Mike.
So you think you can tell heaven from hell?
I got the key to the highway, packed up and bound to go. I'm gonna leave hell running.
All right, there we go. Welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad of bradblog.com in tonight for Mike. He's back on Monday. You can hit me at the Brad Blog on the Twitters. Or you can stop by our chat room at bradblog.com. Desi Doyen, our producer here tonight, and my co-host on the, my lovely co-host, and the managing editor of the Green News Report, which, by the way, if you don't, if it's not heard on your local favorite progressive radio station,
call him, write him,
call
tell him,
complain.
Say, take it.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's,
you'll like
it's
it.
It's free. It's free to them.
Right.
And, all right. And it's fun. So, greennews.bradblog.com for more on that. Okay. So, Des, here's a story I wanted to get to. Oh, and we will get to your calls. I'm sorry. 877-520-1150. If you're on the line, hang on. We're going to try to get to everyone. 877-520-1150. Okay. I wanted you, Des, to stay here because on this story, this, you know, the media loves to say we're divided. The country, the nation is so divided. It's 50-50 nation, whatever it is. You know what? BS. I'm calling BS on that. A new poll. 75% of Americans support regulating CO2, carbon dioxide, as a pollutant. 75%. 60% support revenue-neutral carbon tax. A carbon tax. That's not even cap and trade.
Nope.
So this is a new survey from the Yale Project on Climate Change Communications. More than 1,000 respondents. So 63% of Americans support, quote, signing an international treaty that requires the United States to cut its emissions of carbon dioxide 90%. By the year 2050.
Yeah, that's 63% of Americans. That's a strong majority.
You think?
Yeah.
By margin of 3-1. So this is 61% to 20%. Americans say they would be more likely to vote for a political candidate who supports a, quote, revenue neutral tax shift. In other words, increasing taxes on fossil fuels, but reducing the federal income tax by an equal amount.
Yeah, so like a trade-off. So
right.
If you're going to have to pay more for it, then you'll also get it back, which is kind of how, on your taxes, which is sort of how the carbon tax is going to work. In Australia, who passed a carbon tax back in January, it's going to start in July. It's on the top 500 polluters, industrial polluters in Australia. That money gets rebated to households.
So they're cool. The American people are cool if you add taxes. Tax these fossil fuel companies. Just reduce it from the federal income tax for other people. They're totally cool with this. So, you know, you hear these, the EPA, it's very controversial. And, greenhouse, doing anything about greenhouse gases, climate change, stuff and nonsense. The American people are in favor of this by huge, huge margins.
Oh, yeah, and I like this. My favorite part of this mm-hmm. poll, 61%, a very strong majority, 61% support holding the fossil fuel industry responsible for the hidden costs we pay as, in healthcare and in pollution, the taxpayers have to clean up after the oil companies, both for our air, our water, and the destruction that the drilling causes, and healthcare effects like asthma and stuff like that.
63% want to require utilities to produce 20% clean energy. 63% want that.
So that's not a whole lot of divide. So I guess I'm shocked. I'm shocked, I tell you, that the media is misrepresenting this.
Oh, yes. It's shocking, isn't it? And the fact is, this is always the case. Single payer, when they were going through the healthcare thing, it was something. What was the study? 75% was in favor of single payer. They make up this divide. And frankly, the Republicans exploit this divide because they're the ones who are blocking all of this crap. The American people are not divided like that. This is a scam. This is a scam to let the bad guys and the corporations get away with whatever crap they want. The American people know better. They're not that stupid, but it works really well for both the Republicans and folks in the media to give that impression that we're so divided. No, we're not.
We're actually remarkably in agreement.
Brad, in from Mike Malloy. Stay with us. Your call's next.
Well, they're building a gallows outside my cell. And I've got 25 minutes to go. And the whole town's waiting just to hear me yell. I got 24 minutes to go. Well, they gave me some beans for my last meal. With 23 minutes ago.
Yeah, that's about it. About 23 minutes is all we got.
That's all we got on Friday night.
877-520-1150 is our phone number. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike Malloy tonight. He'll be back with you Monday. Never fear. And we're going to get to your calls in. Well, let's go. Two things. Before we go to the phones here, we were talking before the break. Desi's sitting in with me here. Hey, Des.
Hey.
About this nonsense about this divided country. That they love to exploit this. Well, here, if this doesn't back it up, okay, nearly 3 in 4 Arizona voters favor the DREAM Act. 3 in 4. So Arizona's government, as the first to pass a harsh immigration law, is also ground zero for anti-immigrant sentiment among lawmakers. But even this state's voters overwhelmingly support the DREAM Act, which will provide a path to citizenship for undocumented young people who earn college degrees or serve in the military. 73% of registered voters in Arizona support the DREAM Act, that, by the way, Mitt Romney opposes. This includes 70% of white Arizonans.
Well, of course. You sound surprised by this.
Well, no, what do you mean, of course?
This is the thing. This, to me, it always boils down to this. Voting is a choice. You know, if you're eligible to vote, I personally believe you ought to get out there and vote. Other people can disagree, and I totally, completely understand those reasons for not voting. But I will say, keep in mind, those who do not vote will find themselves at the mercy of those who do.
Well,
regardless of what you think about all of the elections and all of that, if you do not vote, you will find yourself at the mercy of those who
Fine.
Do.
Fine. But you can vote. You can get your people, who you like, whoever they are, in place. But the people who you voted in office do not listen to the people. They pretend that the American people are against single payer, that the American people are against regulations on business, taxing the fossil fuel companies. BS, 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 BS. They pretend that, immigration is a very controversial topic. BS. Arizona, ground zero for this papers, please law. The voters of Arizona want approval of the DREAM Act. You think that'll happen in Arizona?
No.
Of course not.
Not with their current state legislature.
Right. Of course not. All right. Now, somebody, Jeff from Nebraska, is calling in. We had in our Green News Report information about that they're using this chemical from Agent Orange now as an herbicide.
Well, they want to get approval of a genetically modified strain of corn that is resistant to this particular type of old herbicide.
Dow Chemicals is in favor of it.
Dow Chemical is in favor of it, and they want to have their special genetically modified corn crop. That's what's up for approval right now.
Better living through chemicals. All right, let's go to Jeff in Nebraska. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. We got something wrong, you think?
Yes, you do.
Okay,
and,
go.
I'll tell you. I'm a very staunch Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything everybody stands for, and I just hate to see you people getting caught up in some rhetoric and some sensationalism that is incorrect.
All right, tell us what we're incorrect about, staunch Democrat.
Basically, 2,4-D, and now I'm not positive on whether it's what part of constituent it is of Agent Orange, but 2,4-D herbicide is a broadleaf herbicide. Corn is like a grass crop. It's a narrowleaf plant. There is no genetic modification needed on corn to be able to spray 2,4-D on the corn crop.
Well, you should tell Dow that, because they're spending a lot of money to do that.
Well, I don't know. There's some bad information out there, because basically you could spray 2,4-D on corn long before there was ever any genetically modified corn, i.e. Roundup Ready corn or any of the other genetically modified crops that are out there.
So do you know what the debate is and why the USDA.
The USDA
has this period right now of public comment for a few more days. Why it is?
No, it ends today.
Oh, ends today. Okay.
Yeah.
Why is there even a debate? What are they discussing, Jeff, if not this?
I honestly have no idea, because mm-hmm. you've been able to spray 2,4-D on corn forever because
you're allowed to use it. You're allowed to spray it, but thou has developed a specific type of corn, genetically modified, that can withstand, I guess, repeated spraying of 2,4-D. And what it says that it allows farmers, and I'm quoting from the New York Times article, and they're usually pretty good about getting their facts straight on that kind of thing. They
no
say
comment.
They're you
ahead.
Know on
go
this
ahead.
Kind of stuff, right, allowing ahead. Farmers to spray the chemical to kill weeds without harming the corn stalks.
It would never harm the corn. The best analogy I can give you is if you have a lawn and you have dandelions, your lawn is grass.
Oh, yeah, dandelion. Absolutely. It's 2,4-D is definitely one of the most commonly used herbicides in the world.
Exactly. And dandelions are a broadleaf weed. Corn is not a broadleaf. You can spray 2,4-D on corn all day long. It will never damage the corn crop.
Okay, Jeff, what do you do for a living, Jeff?
I'm actually a farmer.
You're a farmer?
I am very well versed and know there's far better chemicals to spray on corn than there is than 2,4-D.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to go back to the we'll make Des hit those books and find out what it is that you could be talking about that is not. Go ahead. What are you saying?
Don't think that. I'm sorry, all Jeff. Right. I appreciate your expertise in this, but I really don't understand though why Dow Chemical would spend all the money to develop this genetically modified corn that's resistant. Seriously, there's got to be a disconnect somewhere in there. Jeff, the billion-dollar company said so.
All right.
I honestly don't understand either because you have Roundup Ready corn, which Roundup Ready is a non-selective herbicide.
Yeah, but they
Roundup
said that everything's already, but everybody's, all the superweeds are now resistant to Roundup.
To that.
So.
All right, Jeff, I got to go. I do appreciate your thoughts here. Yeah.
Not a problem.
Okay.
Appreciate listening to you guys. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thanks, Jeff.
What are you going to do? I don't know. All I can tell you is what Dow spent all their money on.
And there would be some reason why there would be a public comment period that they're
right.
All right. So that's what Jeff says. All right. Let's go to where am I here? Oh, Kevin in Colorado Springs. 877-520-1150 is our number. Kevin in Colorado Springs. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. What else did we get wrong tonight?
Nothing as far as I can tell.
Yay. All right. That's good.
In fact, 73% and 61%, I believe, are super majorities, which is what they seem to need in the Senate now to pass anything. So if you're talking about 73% of Arizonans are in support of the DREAM Act, then what's the problem? I know. It's those guys that we elected, that especially the Democrats. And I was going to ask if you could maybe mention a few of those Democrats that were in support of that SISTA legislation, because I think when we get out there and vote these people in, when they don't do what we were by a majority in support of, then it needs to be told loud and long.
Well, I agree, but let me make one just distinction to be fair here. They are being stopped in many cases in the U.S. Senate by the filibuster by the Republicans. That said, they're not out there pushing for this stuff, and not just the DREAM Act. They have been pushing for the DREAM Act, but all of these things, these regulations on carbon dioxide. They just turned tail and ran from that. Okay, you were talking about CISPA, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing Protection Act, whatever the hell it is. And yes, we have all of these Democrats who joined with the Republicans. Almost all the Republicans were in favor of big brother, big government, spying on citizens, passing that information to the government. But not all of the Democrats. However, a lot of the Democrats. So you were curious, some of those people. I'll read off just some. Where are you from? You're in Colorado?
I'm here in Colorado.
All right, Colorado. Looks like for the Democrats, you might be in luck. I don't see any Colorado representatives among the Democrats on this list. But other than that, I'll just read off some last names real quick. Altmaier, Barrow, Bishop in Georgia and Bishop in New York, Boren, Boswell, Butterfield, Cardoza, Carney, Castor, Chandler, Clyburn in South Carolina. He's the minority whip, and he was in favor of this, voted in favor of passing, you know, spying on corporations, spying on you and passing it to the government. Jim Cooper, Jim Costa, Mark Kritz, Cuellar in Texas. Norm Dix, Donnelly, Garamendi out here in California, Charles Gonzalez in Texas, Hanabusa in Hawaii, Hochul, Kathy Hochul in New York, Steve Israel, Larry Kissel, James Langevin, Larson, Lipinski, Matheson, McCarthy, that's Caroline McCarthy in New York, nice, Mike McIntyre, James Moran, William Owens, Colin Peterson, Mike Ross, Dutch Ruppersberger. He was actually the sponsor of the bill. Kurt Schrader, David Scott, Heath Schuler in North Carolina, Adam Smith, Michael Thompson, Adolphus Towns, a pox on all of their houses. There you go.
Yeah, when they with an election coming up, although I agree with you about all the election irregularities, Desi is right. If we do go out and vote in droves, even with the election irregularities, maybe we could get some of these faux Democrats out of there and put some real progressives in office.
Well, you do that
up for the people.
Yep, and you do that in the primaries. Go get them, my friend.
Exactly.
I got to run, Kevin. Thanks. I appreciate your call and your thoughts here. Let me get to Kelly in Northern California in some mysterious town. Hey, Kelly, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm well.
Good. Jeannie Dean told me to call in. She's kind of a hero. This issue of election fraud, electronic election fraud,
mm-hmm.
has brought a lot of people together. You were talking about division, but I was on a conference call with Jeannie Dean. It was occupiers, Tea Partiers, Liberal Democrats, Conservative Republicans. It was amazing the unity we held on the conference call because we are trying to make sure that the elections are going to be fair and honest. I have learned too much. I don't want to go into detail. It's more than I ever wanted to know. The great potential for tampering with the electronic machines.
Yep.
So I joined up with Watch the Vote 2012. They're on Facebook. And we are using strategies. A recent strategy is to submit complaints to grand juries asking the grand jury to issue a duplicate ballot. What happens is when you walk into the precinct, you're handed a piece of paper. What's this? This is a duplicate ballot. Show clear candidate. Put that in the lockbox. That goes to the grand jury. They're going to compare what they have to the electronic voting machine.
I don't understand. Really, what does this mean, a duplicate ballot that goes into a lockbox? Explain that to me.
Okay, I'll go a little slower.
No, but you have to go quickly because I got to get to a break. So what do you mean by duplicate ballot?
A duplicate ballot where you're handed a piece of paper, you circle your candidate, you put it into the lockbox.
Right.
That goes to a grand jury.
Right.
Then you go vote again with either a ballot or a touch screen, and the grand jury compares the two results.
Oh. Well, in short order, the problem I see there is that you can say one thing in the quote-unquote duplicate ballot, and then you can say something else on the touch screen or the op scan machine, and thus bring the election into question.
However, you're under grand jury subpoena, and you can commit perjury, and that's a very serious problem.
Yeah, good luck with that. Actually, I mean, so I don't mean to poo-poo the idea, but I see a fault in it. However, Kelly, and I got to get to a break here, but I certainly support the work you're doing over there at Watch the Vote 2012 over on Facebook. We can find you.
Yeah, we got a lot of strategies too.
And I'm delighted that you are working together with all of these groups. I don't care who they are. I want to make sure that everybody gets to vote and that their votes get counted accurately in such a way that the people know they've been counted accurately. Kelly, keep up the good fight, my friend. I do appreciate it. All right, we're going to come back to a couple more calls at 877-520-1150 in our last few minutes before we head into the weekend. If you missed any portion of tonight's show, I'll have it up late night tonight on bradblog.com. But you should buy a Mike Malloy podcast and support Progressive Radio at MikeMalloy.com. Brad, in for Mike. Stay with us.
She shot me down, bang, bang. I hit the ground, bang, bang. That awful sound, bang, bang. My baby shot me down.
I'd be
in all the old familiar places.
I will.
That this heart of mine.
I'll see you on the Twitters if you want to figure out where I am, at the Brad Blog on the Twitters and at bradblog.com. And you can also tune in Wednesdays if you're clever. Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. Eastern time at kpfk.org, where I do an hour-long show there. We'll get to your calls in a moment, but my thanks tonight to producer Desi Doyen, to super-duper associate producer Margo Paez, of course, and to the best engineer in the whole wide studio, Tony Sorrentino, here at KTalk AM 1150. Also, my thanks to my guest Dan Auerbach of EFF.org and Joyce Block and Det Anson out there in Pennsylvania. Very quick, someone wanted me to talk about Mitt Romney's voter fraud, and I did want to talk about that tonight. Ran out of time. So you can check it out. Look up Mitt Romney voter fraud at bradblog.com. But I will tell you this. There's a reason why Mitt Romney is not releasing his taxes. You know, he released the 2010, but notice he didn't release his local tax. That is because, as we initially reported months ago on this show, Mitt Romney committed voter fraud in 2010. I'm convinced when he voted in January of 2010 before he even lived in Massachusetts. He didn't own a house there. He voted from his son's basement. In January of 2010, he didn't own a house there until July 2010. Keep that in mind when you hear Fox News lying about voter fraud this year. Mitt Romney. And that's why he ain't releasing his taxes, and he's going to kick and scream and raise holy hell to not release them for that reason. Bank on it. All right, very quickly, John in Minneapolis. I'm sorry, we're going to have to fly through you guys here, but I want to get in as many as I can. John in Minneapolis, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Very quickly, what's on your mind?
I got to speak fast, Brad.
Go for
it. What happens when you combine the National Defense Authorization Act, which says you can disappear Americans, with the recent purchase of 450 million rounds of 40 caliber hollow point bullets by Homeland Security?
What happens?
Well, think on it.
Yeah, I know. It's trouble. At least that's what Glenn Beck would tell you. John, I appreciate the call. I hear you. And, you know, you gotta wonder what the hell these people are doing, what the hell we're allowing them to do. Bob in Tennessee, Clifton, Tennessee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Bob, very quickly, what's on your mind, sir?
As far as a Dow Chemical goes,
mm-hmm.
I believe that they probably own the patent on 2,4-D. In the 70s, 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D were being used to spray on forests, but both of those chemicals break down into dioxin. And if people don't know what dioxin is, they should Google it.
I'm from Missouri. I know what dioxin is. Yeah.
And it's one of the most potent poisons there is, and it's long-lasting. This is a very troubling development.
So you're troubled by the idea of putting the 2,4-D that's used in Agent Orange on the corn?
On anything.
On anything. Unlike our friend up there in Nebraska who says nothing to worry about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Did you figure out if Dow owns the patent on that or not?
Well, at this point, it doesn't look like it. Dow does own the patent on the herbicide-resistant gene, but the original patent was given to a doctor back in the 40s. So, you know, at this point, I haven't found any evidence that Dow owns that patent for that specific herbicide itself.
Inconclusive, and I must get out. Bob, I'm sorry about that. Roger in L.A., I'm sorry I don't have time to get to you, unfortunately. I know you wanted to talk about the right-wing media being mum on the Rupert Murdoch trial. Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yes, they are. And Rupert Murdoch is in big trouble for hacking out their News Corp. And I think that's coming to these shores in the U.S. of A. All right, Brad in for Mike. Until next time, keep it lit. We'll see you at bradblog.com.